as we've said already, Damascus Road will be moving next week. I know that that's been a lot of repetition on it, but I really want you to know that next week, please don't show up here on Sunday morning, because then you'll realize, oh, I have to go somewhere else. And I understand sometimes people get in habits and you'll just be driving and they're like, oh, I totally missed the turn. But I was just telling you, next week we will be moving after 6 years of our church family meeting here. And after 3 years of me being the pastor in this church, we're going to be going. And guys, it's been a good 3 years. I wonder if Jesus said that, but we'll get back to that later. Today, I want to talk about saying goodbye. The theme for this church over this year has been go. I believe God has called us to go, and one way is very physically. We will be going from here to the Mac. But as you go, that inevitably means saying goodbye. And even, I find it interesting that the word go is in goodbye. Maybe not intentionally, but in your life, as you go, as you follow God's command to go, there will be goodbyes that you have to say. And some people, you can try to over-spiritualize it one way and be like, well, God says, don't even think about the former things and forgetting what is behind. And so we just leave it and try to not to say goodbye ever. But I don't know that that's even really the correct biblical perspective to it. And I want us to look at that today. How do we say goodbye, or how do we find ourselves in Jesus' story as he did that? Because we, the church, as followers of Christ, we want to love like Jesus loved. And we want to teach and live like Jesus taught and lived. We want to obey like Jesus obeyed. So how do we be like Jesus in moments like this? I'm excited about what's ahead, and I think most of us are. I haven't heard too many people crying about moving to the Mac. If you are, that's okay. I don't want to gloss over that possibility that for many of us, whether it's right now or whether it comes in a few weeks, that there will be moments of emotion toward it. There are a lot of memories I have here. I got married over there, I've said before. Like, just I was married at this day, okay, and there's so many amazing stories of getting to pray with people who are here, or conversations or fun that we had. There's so many things, and I can understand where that can have emotional reaction to it. I was just in the States for a few weeks visiting friends and family, and one thing that I like to do when I'm on vacation is to go up to pastors and say, hi, I'm a pastor, I'm young, I'm new at doing it, can you give me any advice? And with one of them, he said, well, I got a little bit of time and that's a broad topic, can you narrow it down? And I said, one of the things is my church is going to be moving from one location to another. Do you have any recommendations for pastoring people through change? And he said, the first thing that comes to mind is a quote that I've heard recently. People don't resist change, they grieve loss. But change, anytime there's change, there is a loss of something. Even when it's a good change, there's a loss of something. And so I want to take that to heart and realize and give us a little space to know, okay, there is a loss that's happening here, despite the good that I think is coming from it. I want to tell you some of the stories from my own life as well. When I was a kid, my parents were going to sell our van. It was like an 8-person van. We'll get to that story in a second. That's the next one. It's okay to leave it there. But when I was a kid, my family was going to sell our van. And I remember as I don't know, a 10-year-old child, thinking, you can't do that to us. You can't sell our van. For some reason, I just had this connection with our van. And this wasn't a democracy. That's not how my father ran this ship. He's like, kids, we're selling the van. But it's our van. I can be a little bit sentimental. I am. And then as I got older and got a driver's license, my first car is the one that you see. My parents got me that car, so you could say it's daddy's car, but I think that you can see that it's not the fanciest thing. It's the Murata. It was a Dodge Murata. And she didn't need to have a different name than that. I thought Murata was a beautiful name for my car.
Is that Rust?
Maybe. There are so many memories I have of it, but my parents, again, they were the ones who bought the car. They had the title to it. And so one day they tell me, by the way, we're selling the car. Tomorrow morning you're going to have to drive to school in a different car because it'll be gone. And again, I'm like, no, you can't get rid of the Murata, but I love it. So that morning that they were going to sell it, I made my mom get a camera, and I went out so I could pose in front of the Murata so I could have something to remember her by. And there are so many sentimental feelings I have toward it. There's in the front, the bumper, part of it just sagged down that made it look like she had this smile all the time. She had one of those old cassette tape decks. I mean, the fact that there are cassette tapes, if any of you remember what those are. Yeah, I love those. The summer that I dropped a big jar of pickles in the back. And so all summer long, it smelled like pickles in that car. And I remember it with joy. The old kind of window that you had to roll down. And the ceiling, the cloth on the ceiling wasn't stuck to it. So like it would hit my head as I drove. And having the shifter in the middle. And when I would drive with a friend, like every time we'd come up to a stoplight, I would try to slow down enough that I didn't have to actually stop. And it was this game of like, turn green, turn green, turn green, so I don't have to fully stop. That I just sentimentally have a thing with that car. But it had to go, and I had to say goodbye to it. In some ways, I'm a sentimental person, but I believe God has built that into us as human beings. If you look through so much of what he says, especially in the Old Testament, but also in the New Testament, there are these commands, remember, remember, remember this, and to commemorate things. He would tell the people with your children, tell them this when they wake up and when they go to sleep. Tell them when you're walking along the road. Anytime you walk outside of the house, remind them of these things. Remember it. Remember it. There are all these festivals that are in the Old Testament that he says, go and do these festivals. And you go to a certain place at a certain time, and there are special things that you do every year. Which made me think of when I was in the States recently, some of our friends, their families had a house on the lake. And so we got to go visit their lake house. But they're telling us these stories as we're going up of, yeah, every summer we go out to the lake and this is what the adults do and this is what the kids do. And you know what's going to happen every time you go. And having that rhythm to it is part of the joy of it. And as a kid, it was just, oh, we loved getting to go to the lake house. I feel like God built those festivals into his people in a similar way. You go to a special place at a special time and you have these things and these certain smells that draw back memories of a certain moment. The idea of making memories is something that I believe that sometimes we are too close to losing in our churches, especially those that would be maybe more evangelical or Pentecostal or some of those where we don't connect as much with some of that past, but some of those memories are really, really good. And I think we should do that for our kids, of having things. You don't necessarily have to do the pilgrimages to Jerusalem or making your family live in a tabernacle outside the house for a month or something, but you could. But I remember as a kid, when we would go to church, I didn't make any money, so I had no money, but as we were getting out of the car, invariably, my mother would give each one of us a coin, whether that was a quarter or a dime, something that was a small thing, so that we could put into the offering that Sunday. And as a kid, that was just, it was kind of a ritual, but it was something I looked forward to, because I wanted to have that coin to be able to put in. And in a way, it's a memory that was sort of sentimental to me, but it was also building into me this idea of, I love to give in the church, and I love to see what's going on with that. Or holiday memories. In the United States, there's a holiday that's called Thanksgiving, And my mom was the kind of person who really wanted to make sure that we celebrated Thanksgiving. It's only a month ahead of Christmas. And my mother every year would complain about the fact that Christmas kept getting earlier and earlier and everyone's worried about Christmas. And she said, we're going to celebrate Thanksgiving because it deserves it. And what we would do is, during the meal where you have this big meal, because Americans love to eat a lot, especially at Thanksgiving. But at the meal, we'd sit around the table and my mom would make every person around the table say something that they were thankful for just from that last year. And if we had neighbors that were visiting, they had to take part. And if we had friends that we brought back from school, they had to take part. And if we were out at someone else's house, she would still make us do it. My mom just had that. That's something that we'll do together, is that we give thanks. And having those memories is, in a way, I think, part of making something holy. That term, one, it means to set something apart for a specific purpose, but that this idea of something being special. And so God in the Old Testament, I mean, you see all these things that they're holy items and holy days and holy places and holy things. And for me, when I think about that van that my parents sold when I was a kid, to a degree, that was holy. Like, it has a special purpose. It fits our family. And to just treat it like it wasn't special is shame on you, Mom and Dad. It's unholy. Those were things that God built into us and wanted to be there, because I think that's part of who God is. If you read through the prophets, you see God saying things like in Jeremiah 2:2, he says, this is what the Lord says, I remember how you loved me when you were young, and your love was as a bride. I remember how you followed me in the desert through a land that had not been planted. And he says in Hosea 9, similar things where it's like, I remember this. And, oh, Israel, when I first found you, it was like finding a fresh garden, fresh grapes in the desert. And when I saw your ancestors, it was like seeing ripe fruit for the first time for the harvest. And God is somehow saying, I remember moments. I connect memories, and these things are special to me, and I hold them in my heart in a special way. The danger is sometimes we don't remember nearly as well as God does. And by sometimes, I mean always. In Revelation 2, verse 4 and 5, God says, Jesus is speaking to the church in Ephesus, and he tells them, I have this one thing against you. You don't love me as you did at first. Remember how you once loved me. Be sorry for your sin and love me again as you did at first. Keep that memory. Keep that sacred. Keep that special. Keep that holy. And remember like God does. So it seems like of all the things, when God says, I remember, he remembers love. Isn't that cool about God? Of all the things that he chooses to remember, when he says, I remember love. And what he calls us to do is to remember him. Time and goodbyes can play tricks on our memory. Have you ever had that, where you start to remember something differently because of over time, or because you're saying goodbye? Sometimes bad things become good. Like, have you ever had those moments where you have this job, and like every day of the job, I hate this job, I hate this job, I hate this job, I hate this job. And then you get up to your last day of work, and you're like, oh, I'm going to kind of miss it. It was nice. Or like people, this may sound bad, but like someone, you're like, they're so annoying, and they do this thing, and it bothers me all the time. And then when they're gone, you're like, I miss the way how they used to do that thing that bothered me all the time. We're weird like that. Sometimes good things become bad in our memory. I mean, take if you have past girlfriends or past boyfriends, and at the moment you're like, this is so wonderful, I love this person so much. And then after you break up, it's like, wasn't that good? You weren't that nice. You weren't that special. And we sometimes look back at things that way, or you mature, and then that place that you used to love as a kid, I've heard that works for like Dutch people with the Efteling. It's this like kid paradise land. And you went there as a kid and you're like, this is the most magical place in the world. I love this. And you go back and you're like, this place is a dump. I have not been to the Efteling to say it, so I'm not trying to tell you it's good or bad. But have you had places like that or jokes that you thought were so hilarious? There was this one joke that I told my brother, and every time I just had to say the first sentence and he would laugh at it because he knew what was coming. And then when he stopped doing that, I would just make a weird voice and say the first sentence and he would laugh all over again. We thought it was the hilarious thing. I know hilarious is not a word. But then you get older and you're like, that joke is so lame. I'll tell you the joke later, Matthew. Or movies that you saw and you thought, wow, that's so cool. Especially even now, like movies from 15 years ago and they came out and they were cutting edge technology. Like, that's so awesome and that rocked. And you see it now and you're like, that's horrible graphics. I'm going to go back to playing my Halo. You know how sometimes things that memory and time changes at? And this building has a lot of memories for me. And I think a lot of memories for many people who are here. And the danger can be that over time we'll either glamorize it or we'll demonize it. We'll have that, wow, it was so wonderful. It was so much better back there. I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, talking about the people of Israel. And in the Bible, we have this story that the people of Israel, they're slaves in Egypt, and then God takes them out of Egypt. But as they're going, they start going, things were so wonderful back in Egypt where we were slaves. You're like, what? How are you glamorizing this? So I don't want us to look back and be like, oh, it was always better here. But I also don't want us to have that time shift and go, yeah, things weren't so good there. I just want us to be honest about what it was. And here's my recommendation, both for this place and just in your life. When you look back at things, be thankful and be hopeful. We're told be thankful in all circumstances. 1 Thessalonians tells us that. And be thankful for what it was or for what it is. Maybe things aren't completely perfect. Maybe there's glass still on the floor. Maybe it smells like beer from the party last night. I'm still thankful for what the Stay Okay has been for us in that way. Be thankful for what was. And yet be hopeful for what is to come. We look forward. We're told in 1 Peter that we set our hope fully on the grace to be brought to us, that we'll receive when Jesus appears. That our hope is set still in front of us. And I'm not going to look back on here and be like, well, those were the glory days and it's all downhill from here. No, don't do that. Here's a random aside. I was talking with people about marriage over the last few days and while I was back in the States. And I think sometimes people get that idea that with marriage, they'll go, like, the wedding and the first year is the great part. And then it just goes downhill from there. Don't do that. Don't think that way. Instead, it should go the opposite direction. Like, you're growing and it's going to get better. That really doesn't have a whole lot to do with this sermon. It's just an extra aside for you. But with so many things in our memory, you go, oh, the glory days back when we were just married. Or, oh, the glory days when we just started. Or, oh, the glory days when there was this moment. Or, oh, the glory days when I had that connect group. And it's good to look back and be thankful, as I said. Don't lose that. But also be hopeful for what God's going to do in the future. God is beyond what I can think of. So to understand him can be hard. One of the things that I find interesting with this, even as I said, like, God talks about things like, I remember you did this. And how can a God who is outside of time remember like a timely thing or have a moment like that? I mean, for him, like, he kind of lives in all of these moments at once. Or I don't get all of it. I'll admit that. But we see Jesus, and Jesus lived on this earth. And so if we want to see what God was like, we're told Jesus was the image of the invisible God. He's the one who shows us what God was like, and he at least lived in time for a while. So I want to look more at his example. On the night before he was going to be crucified, he knew he was going to die. And he knew that he was having a moment with these men that he had lived with for the last 3 years. That was going to be a last time. It was a saying goodbye. He knew he would see them afterward, but it was going to be different. The way that they had interacted was going to be different every moment after that. So he's having this last night with them. How did Jesus say goodbye? And as I said at the beginning, I wonder if Jesus looked at these men and said, guys, it's been a good 3 years. I'm not sure on that one, but I just want to tell you some of the things that he did say that night. Some of the stuff that we know that are written down. He tells them, I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you. I will not eat it again. I will not eat this Passover until it finds fulfillment in the future. I will not drink again of the fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it anew with you in my Father's kingdom. One of them asks him a question of like, well, Jesus, what about this? He says, don't you know me after I've been among you such a long time? I've loved you. Remain in my love. You are my friends. I no longer call you servants. I've called you friends. And you are those who have stood by me in my trials. Later he says, because I've told you these things, you're filled with grief. And I have much more to say to you, more than you can now bear. But you will grieve, but your grief will turn to joy. And later he says, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. Later they fall asleep and he's like, could you not keep watch with me? Just for 1 hour, could you not keep watch with me? As he prays for them, he prays, Holy Father, protect them. While I was with them, I protected them and kept them safe. But Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am. And I know that all of that seems a little disjointed, but some of those pieces, when I read those, when I think of it, that sounds like Jesus is being sentimental to me. He's talking about, this is the last time I'm going to be doing something. He's telling them, guys, this is how I care about you. I love you like this. He's sort of doing this graduation with them. Of like, I don't call you this anymore, but I now call you this because you guys are going to now act in this certain way. It's a passing along the torch in a way. And he tells them about gifts that he's leaving with them. He says, I give to you a kingdom. And he says, I leave my peace with you. And I'm sending the comforter to you. I mean, these are all the sorts of things I do if I'm going to say goodbye. Is like, oh, this is the last time we're together. And yeah, thank you so much for this time. I've loved getting to be with you. Or we give a gift like we're doing with the Stay Okay. Jesus talks about the things that they did together. And he's remembering, oh, you guys were with me, even in the hard times. Sometimes you do that, the goodbye, right? Is you're like, man, remember how we went through this and how we made it? That was a great time. And we see emotions going on in Jesus. Where they're written, we're told out that he is sorrowful. And he's troubled and he's distressed in that time. And he wants to make sure that they're taken care of. That's why he's praying, God, protect them. While I was with them, I protected them. But Father, protect them. He says, this is the one thing I really want. I want them to be with me where I am. You have that feeling when you're saying goodbye to people? I'm saying goodbye, but I really would want you to still be with me. Saying goodbye is hard. And Jesus knows, even though in a good way, everything's going to change. Jesus knows, like, this is an incredible moment. Jesus, the one who is the image of God, who has lived this perfect life, is going to be sacrificed on the cross, and that's going to hurt really bad. But that will be the moment in history that helps to change the way people look about God for centuries to come, is going to make a way for us to be reconciled with God. It's going to show his love and that he would rather sacrifice himself than show judgment to people. It's going to show that he has had power over death because he's going to rise from the dead. He's going to resurrect back from the dead and show, no matter what you do to me, the very worst that you can do, I will be victorious. I will be stronger than it. And I will offer you still my goodness. Jesus knows everything's going to change for the better. But everything's going to change. And anytime something changes, there's loss of some sort. And Jesus is going to see his disciples again after he raises from the dead. He's going to get to talk to them. But it's going to be different. You ever have those moments where you live somewhere, you move away, and you come back to visit, and you realize it's great to spend time with you, and in some ways it feels like we were never apart, but it's different. Jesus knows that. And maybe I'll never be able to walk into this day okay quite the same way in the future as well. I'll be glad to see you here, but it'll be different. And I think Jesus gets that. So what does Jesus do for these men? He knows he's saying goodbye. He knows it's going to be difficult on them. They don't quite get it yet, but he's like, when you guys find out what just happened, you're going to be like, how did we miss this great opportunity? So what does he do for them? I mean, the first thing we're told he does that night is he serves them, that he washes their feet. He shows them the full extent of his love, is the way that we're told in the biography of Jesus in the Gospel of John. He shows them his love. He tells them his love. He teaches them. And then he gives them a picture. Jesus didn't have a Polaroid to be able to be like, cheese, Jesus, here you guys, here to remember me by. So what he has is bread. And what he has is the fruit of the vine, it's drink. And he takes the bread and he says, guys, this is my body. When you see it, remember me. He takes the drink and he says, this is my blood. Do this. Remember me. He's giving them a picture. When you guys look at that, remember this. When you look at it, see me. And yes, very much, he says, this is my body broken for you, and this is my blood spilled for you. And he wants them to remember the crucifixion that's coming up. He wants them to remember this sacrificial love, because that's the highest form of love he could show. And he says, I want you to remember my love. Here's the best way you can do it, is by remembering that one moment. But it's remember me. In saying goodbye, Jesus says, remember me.